I am back with Miss Stephanie. So before we go off the air, tell the people how they can find you again, Stephanie.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Yes. I just want to say, and to find me, you just need to look up the name Stephanie Strohl. I'll spell it out, S-T-E-F-A-N-Y, Strohl, S-T-R-U-L-L. And you can find me on any streaming platform, Spotify, YouTube, Amazon Music, iTunes. Just type in my name and all my music will come up, and soon to be released in the next year, a new album. So I'm excited about that.
Well, you know, that is simply great. I mean, I've enjoyed the time we've been here, and I thank you for getting up on Sunday morning. Amen.
You are so welcome. It was well worth the travel and the getting up a little earlier. And thankful for the time change, too.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm charged at 30 minutes. I got about 41 seconds out of 30 minutes left, you know. And I've been here with Miss Stephanie Strohl. And she's been sharing some of my music, recording artists here in Portland. So, you know what? We're going to... Anything you want to last say, Miss Stephanie?
Just thank you so much, guys, for tuning in. I appreciate all of you, love all of you, and we'll see you next time.
We will see you next time. I'll see you next week on 30 Minutes. So God bless you and keep the faith.
And K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hello, and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join us for a visit with leaders in personal and cultural transformation. I'm your host, Donald Altman. Humans have been seeking for spiritual truths for centuries. One approach known as the perennial philosophy has many roots. Its main purpose is to understand the core metaphysical truths that support all being. This, as you can imagine, is no easy task. To help us explore these ideas today is William Quinn. He has an MA degree in religious studies from the University of Chicago's Divinity School and a PhD from the University of Chicago's Humanities Division in the Perennial Philosophy. Later, William got a law degree from Arizona State University College of Law. He worked for the Theosophical Society in America, was the editor of Quest Magazine, and served as the associate editor of the Theosophical Publishing House. William has published three books, The Only Tradition, The Chela's Handbook, and his new book we'll be exploring today, The Higher Spiritual Path. In addition to these three books, William has authored more than 60 articles on comparative religion, spirituality, and metaphysics, as well as articles on American Indian history, culture, and law. He has lectured for the Theosophical Society and several universities, as well as having given numerous seminars and workshops in all these subject areas. Well, it's an honor and a pleasure to have William Quinn here with us today. Hello, William, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Well, hello, Donald. Thank you for inviting me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's great to have you and to talk about some of these issues. I think we need spirituality and get people steeped in that path in a serious way, especially nowadays. I'm curious, how did you first get interested in the perennial philosophy? And also, how would you define that for our audience?
Well, taking the first part of your question, that goes way, way back when I was a student at the University of Chicago, University of Arizona in Tucson. That was in the middle of the 1960s. And as you may recall from that, I'm not sure if you're old enough to recall from that, but there was a lot of spirituality in that whole hippie experience. You know, the music of the Moody Blues and the Beatles and the Incredible String Band and these types of groups like that all reflected that. And there was a huge importation of Eastern philosophy and Eastern spirituality that occurred in the late 60s. You may remember such individuals as Richard Alpert, for example, who was an associate at Harvard with Timothy Leary, who right. later went to India and became a guru, a chela of a guru there, and renamed himself Baba Ram Das, and did some fabulous work ever since. Yeah, that was the sort of milieu that I was entered into, and I discovered theosophy during that time, the writings of the Theosophical Society, and read them voraciously, and actually incorporated some of that material into my academic studies, and graduated with a couple of degrees in the perennial philosophy. So then getting to the second part of your question, what is the perennial philosophy? You described it in the intro as a subject area that has many roots. And I would change that metaphor a little bit, as long as we're talking about vegetation, and say it has many flowers, but only one trunk. And the trunk of the perennial philosophy goes back to proto-history. And as human beings began to learn to write and record their thoughts, we have the writings in early China, early India, in early Egypt, that all have discussions of certain aspects of the perennial philosophy. And what this is a body of principles and truths and laws of the universe that are immutable and that are immemorial, and they pop up from time to time in various cultures. The most significant outflowering of the perennial philosophy in the last several hundred years was that in the 1870s, when H.P. Blavatsky and H.S. Alcott undertook the foundation of, or the establishment of, the Theosophical Society. And Blavatsky, who was referred to by shorthand as HPB, Helena P. Blavatsky, wrote a tremendous amount of material. She was a hugely prolific writer. And all of those, many of those ideas and principles and laws that are part and parcel of the perennial philosophy, she gave us in relatively modern English. So that they're all available to students now.
Okay. You know, I'm curious, how has this perennial philosophy and the principles there informed your own life, and in terms of even daily decisions that you might make?
Well, good question. And you know, in my own life, I have wandered here and there. I began my professional career at the Theosophical Society, as you mentioned in your intro, as an editor there in the editorial staff. Mm-hmm. But after that, I went to graduate school, and then that took me into studying and dealing with Native American Indians as an ethnohistorian. And that took me then to go to law school and become a specialist in federal Indian law. And so those weren't directly relevant or didn't bear directly on the perennial philosophy, although, you know, at every chance I got, I tried to mention that. But it was really only after I retired from the working world that I began to reinvest in that. And that was about 12 years ago. And since then, I've written two books, as you noted, the Chela's Handbook, and then my new one, which was released this month, The Higher Spiritual Path. And I should say that even though I may have drifted laterally from the perennial philosophy, it has guided my life completely. And now, in a sense, it has become my life.
Okay. You know, what I wanted to ask you too was, this book is talking about really taking a deep dive into the spiritual world, not to, read a self-help book here or there, but to become what you call a wayfarer. Maybe you can explain what it means to be a wayfarer, and what would that, what is the discipline and the effort required to undertake that kind of a path?
Well, I think what we're talking about here is a wayfarer on the higher spiritual path. You know, what there are varieties of wayfarers. I think it's even was used in some of the biblical translations in the New Testament about wayfarers. But what my particular meaning of it is, in at least in the book, is that this is a path where one seeks to become a chela or a student or a disciple of one of the adepts who form a brotherhood, sisterhood of such people. These are mostly people, at least the higher initiates in this order, who have been liberated from the wheel of death and rebirth.
So a chela, that's a Sanskrit word?
Yes, that's a Sanskrit word for basically a disciple. That's a chela.
Okay.
And so, you know, to become a chela of one of these adepts is not an easy task because they work and live in a world that is of a much, even though it's on the physical plane, it is of a much more purified stratum of life in terms of the electromagnetic frequencies and energies that they surround themselves with. And usually these are in very remote places. They are not public people. They don't give interviews. They don't, you know, they don't do that. And it's a loose association, but it is as old as the perennial philosophy. And these people essentially have been the guardians of certain secrets in the universe that from time to time get revealed, such as Fermi and Oppenheimer revealed the fission of atoms, in the 1940s. These are all facts of nature, and you know, some of them still are kept secret that are even more, perhaps more profound than the nuclear revolution. But to become a chela of one of these requires an extraordinary degree of purification. That is the, you know, plant-based diet, an avoidance of intoxicants, avoidance of sexual misconduct if or sexuality at all, celibacy, just being a chastity of thought, of word and of deed, loving kindness to all people, charity and compassion for the suffering.
Okay, no, it sounds a lot like the precepts, the Buddhist precepts, actually, very similar. You know, you talk in your book about free will or willpower. And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of neuroscientists today say that there really is no such thing as free will, that if you reduce the brain, look at the brain, that everything is almost appears to be preconditioned. What would you say to that?
Well, I mean, I think that's sort of a reduction of what I would refer to as scientism rather than hard science. Mm-hmm. You know, the people used to believe that consciousness was simply a random act of a certain amount of cells in one's brain that coalesced and formed a consciousness. And so that basically puts the physical arena first and the spiritual arena second. And I would argue that just the reverse is true. You know, there's a famous saying by René Descartes, the French philosopher, who said, ergo, I've forgotten the Latin.
I think, therefore I am.
I would say I am, therefore I think, because what that does is it reprioritizes the spiritual and the consciousness in the universe of which we are one and of which we are a part. And then that's the a priori and first principle that we need to deal with. And then we evolve into the physical plane, we take on physical bodies, we go through various incarnations until we reach a point at the end of that transmigrational process where we become released from the wheel of death and rebirth by the balancing of all of our karmic debt, the good and bad. And that way, and incidentally, those people who do that, who are released from that, become what is referred to in Sanskrit as jivan mukta. That can happen during a person's life or very often during the transition between death and rebirth. But those are the types of individuals that make up the adepts of this order that I was talking about. These are people who have been through the process and have been released. and are highly spiritualized beings, right?
So they're making the conscious decision to return to help others.
Exactly. And that is called the Bodhisattva principle in Buddhism.
You know, you go into some length about karma, and karma is a very popular idea nowadays, right?
But yes.
You kind of explore it a little more deeply. Can you talk about what karma means to you in terms of those who are on this higher spiritual path?
One of the immemorial principles of the universe is what we refer to as the law of compensation and or the law of cause and effect, which affects everything in the universe from the smallest nano quark to the largest galaxy. And it operates on the physical plane in a way that was described by Isaac Newton in his book Principia, where he talked about for every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction, right? Cause and effect. And the law of karma is a sort of metaphysical correlation or correspondence of that principle. It's easy to see in the physical, you know, under Isaac Newton's law, but then you extrapolate and take it into the spiritual, and you've got this sort of metaphysical balancing of these ledgers. Positive karma on the one hand and opositive karma. I prefer to use those terms than good and bad, positive, opositive. And once those become balanced, one starts the ledger when one enters the human realm as an individual reincarnating entity. And at the end of that process, which sometimes takes hundreds, if not thousands, of incarnations to reach, there is a sense of there's a karmic ledger that reincarnating entity takes with him, with it, because it's genderless, with it over the course of that whole process. And when those become balanced, that's then reaches the point, or at least the eligibility, allows for the eligibility of release from the wheel of death and rebirth.
Yeah, it in modern day terms, you might say what goes around comes around.
That too. There are lots of ways to say it. But you point out something interesting, Donald, and that is there has been a kind of a misinformed cultural interpretation of karma, as if it is some sort of retribution for wrongdoing. You know, one often sees in movie scripts and television scripts where somebody is taking revenge on another person, they'll say some phrase like "karma's a bitch," isn't it?
Right.
That's not the karma of which I write in my book. That's the sort of modern misinterpreted and desacralized view of karma, and that's unfortunate because it's a much deeper subject than that.
Yeah, you know, how important. One thing that strikes me, and I've been seeing how divisive things are nowadays, and people are so easily reactive and falling into an energy of destructive energy of hate almost toward others. I mean, they're so divisive that it's an either or, it's a dualistic way of looking at things. And so what role does love play in this spiritual path for you and this love energy? How would you define that?
Well, I would say that love is a feeling and a force that really is the only effective remedy against the sort of cultural dissolution and the inversion of values and principles that we see today. And we see this sort of, it's been growing and it's been devolving, I should say, this idea that I present as an inversion of spiritual values and principles. And one sees that inversion where justice yields to injustice, where good yields to evil, where sustained stewardship yields to exploitation. We see that everywhere. We see the rise of repressive autocracies and where truth yields to falsehood and disinformation. And the only way really around that problem is to restore the balance of the spiritual principles that we've left behind. And really the only effective tool to do that is by the radiation, by radiating love and by upholding the truth, of course, to stand for the truth in all things and to speak it regardless of the consequences of it. And sometimes it's dangerous to speak the truth in some of these repressive regimes, as we all know. But speaking the truth and behaving in a way with loving kindness toward all and compassion, that's the only remedy to the problem that we have. How we get that in a cultural sense, how we can do that is probably a process of one by one, all of us having a sort of a spiritual revelation within ourselves to recognize that issue and then to do something about it.
Yeah, it was the Buddha who said, hatred does not overcome hate. Only love can overcome hate. That is the eternal law.
Yes,
and
that's
I think that's such an important thing for us to remember.
Right.
You were talked about finding an adept, somebody who, and that they tend to be somewhat reclusive and not very public. I mean, so how do you go about finding someone who could be that kind of a guide for you? And then to know that you could really trust that person, that seems like a big leap for a lot of people, right?
Right, right. It is. And that's, you've raised a very sort of central and also difficult question. Blavatsky once said that the only way really to make any kind of connection with these adepts is through one's spiritual principles, and by which he meant that every human being is composed of this is in the metaphysical doctrine, the theosophical doctrine. Every human being is composed of seven basic principles. And we all are familiar with the first one, which is our physical body. We're all familiar with the fourth one, which is our emotions and the seat of volition, our feelings. We're all familiar with our fifth one, which is the mind. And the mind then is, in this system, is subdivided again into the higher and lower minds, the sort of ordinary mind and the abstract mind. And then one of the principles that some of us are familiar with is the sixth principle, which is the intuition. In Sanskrit, the word is buddhi. But there are these other principles, the highest of which is the atma, which is that portion of the human being that is unconditioned, eternal, omniscient, boundless, because it is connected to the to the atma of the cosmos, in a sense, the spiritual force or energy, collective spiritual force or energy of the universe. We're all parts of that. We have this divine flame within ourselves. And then we've got a couple of other principles that deal with the life energies in our bodies that most of us don't deal with. But so there are these seven principles. The highest three are the atma and the buddhi, the spirit, the intuition, and the mind. And that is the road, that's the pathway, that's the road to reaching these adepts. And that the only way to do that is through meditation. And so one needs to have a conscious, affirmative objective or goal of getting into communication with these at the outset of one's meditation and make that a daily affirmation. And eventually one will reach that goal. But it takes, in many cases, a lifetime or more to reach these, because at the same time, one has to be purified to a level where one would expect to be accepted as a chela by these gurus. And that, again, is not an easy task, as we discussed earlier. It requires an extraordinary degree of purification.
Yeah, and that purification is something that, with so much distraction nowadays, seems like it would take quite an effort, would you say?
Oh, incredible. Particularly if we live in the modern world, in the modern West, or now even the modern world of the globe, large cities and distractions and billboards with racy images on them and films and movies and everything. We're surrounded with all of the distractions and temptations in the outer world that really make it very difficult. Now, some people find it easier to lead a more reclusive lifestyle in an ashram or a monastery. And, that I think probably would help. And I think probably some of the chelas of these adepts are drawn from those spiritual communities that are isolated so that they don't come in contact with all the stuff that you and I do living out in this outer world. In a way, though, in sort of a perverse way, I like to think that if one can make it in the outer world and retain some element of purification and purity, then that's almost getting an extra layer of protective armor, because it's a lot easier to be pure in an isolated spiritual community than it is out here.
So purity does not necessarily mean renunciation.
No.
But it could be simplification.
Oh, that very much, yes. I agree, simplification.
And also, it sounds like it would have a lot to do with, using your discrimination. What is helpful, what is beneficial, and what is not, right? Making that distinction.
Yes, all of the above. You know, we need to marshal all of the forces that we have, you know, common sense, logic, reason, our intuition, a keen discernment, and all of those, and apply them to every aspect of our daily lives.
Yeah.
See if we can get through without polluting ourselves in some way or another.
How can we better develop our intuition? Does the higher spiritual path talk to that idea?
Yeah, actually, I have a chapter on that in my book, and it's almost a how-to chapter. It's a lot simpler than one seems. I make the metaphor in my book about developing the intuition using the metaphor of a bodybuilder. We're all born with an intuition in our sixth principle. And, you know, most of us don't spend much time thinking about it during the course of our lives. And some people are, innately intuitive, and some people are not. But it can be developed by practice. And by what I mean that is, by that I mean, just like a bodybuilder, you have to know that you have an intuition. You have to use your intuition wherever you get a hint or a glimpse or an omen or anything, a sense of anything that you believe is going to affect your mind or your body or your status or something. Then more and more we need to recognize it's an intuition, and more we need to rely on that intuition. And sometimes we're wrong and we make mistakes, but that's how we learn. And right. So it's like pumping iron and making your biceps grow bigger. The only way you can do that is through repetition. And so
yeah.
The repetition of relying, of being aware of the intuitions that you receive or that you detect, and relying on those to help you in your life, then by that and by practice and by making mistakes and correcting them, it gets stronger and stronger and stronger.
You know, I like that idea, and I'm glad that you have a chapter on that in your book. I think it's very important. Is there a short quote or any brief message you'd like to leave with our listeners? We kind of run out of time, and I know there's a lot more we could explore, but is there anything you want to share quickly?
No, just that the your listeners should all be aware that all of us as human beings, we are all embraced in oneness, and we need to treat each other as spiritual beings, and collectively we can then employ this loving kindness that is so badly needed in the world, and move on and forward from that.
Well, that's a very beautiful sentiment. Thank you, William. Where could people find the Higher Spiritual Path?
Well, it's available through the publisher, as you mentioned earlier. It's also available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble and those types of purchasing sites on the internet.
Okay, great. Let's be sure to tell our listeners about the website where the book is published, and you can find a little bit more out about William's work as well as the Higher Spiritual Path, and that's collectiveinkbooks.com. So that's one word, collectiveinkbooks.com. For those of you who tuned into the Pathway Show late, this is your host, Donald Altman, author of the new spiritual adventure novel, Travelers, a 2023 Next Generation Indie Book Awards recipient for first novel and general fiction. My books on mindfulness include Simply Mindful Resilience, the Simply Mindful Coloring Book, Simply Mindful, a 7-week course and personal handbook for mindful living, 1-Minute Mindfulness, and others. Information about my courses, books, and CDs can be found at mindfulpractices.com. In a second, I'll tell you how you can rewind and replay this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast. Today, we've been visiting with author William Quinn, an expert in the perennial philosophy and a leader in the fields of personal growth and spirituality. I want to say thank you to all our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast and streamed via KBOO-FM Sunday mornings at 8:30 USA Pacific Time. Podcasts of today's show, which you can listen to and forward to others, are available for free at divination.com. And that's spelled divination.com, as well as via iTunes and other free podcast servers. This is Donald Altman, along with Pathways host Paul O'Brien, reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways radio and podcasts. Thanks again to William Quinn and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Oh, I tell well, KBOO 90.7, Tasha T. Sedat.
Buongiorno a tutti, buona domenica, ben sintonizzati su Cable. Buongiorno, good morning, you're listening to the Italian Hour on KBOO.